Welcome back to Women Made New. I'm your host, Crystalina Everett. Thank you for joining us. We are here with Lisa Cotter discussing her new book, Reveal, Living the Feminine Genius. And before we went to break, we were discussing all the different lists of the different gifts that are within her book that she explains and describes. And Lisa, would you go through some of them or all of them for the listeners right now?
Yeah, let's start with self-giving. That's the first one on the list. And to make sure, I always want to be clear with this. So this is not a definitive list. JP2 didn't say here are the eight gifts of the feminine genius, or, you know, he never gave us a list, but these are the things that I saw him pulling out frequently as he was talking about the feminine genius, the gift of womanhood, what women uniquely bring into the world. And so I start with self-giving, which I think some people, if you know the theology of the body, that can be a little surprising because it's like, oh, but I thought that women's nature is receptive. Man's nature is as a giver, right? And this is not wrong in any way at all to understand it in that way. But it doesn't mean that these gifts are exclusive. So Pope Benedict does an amazing job of talking about how men and women, there are certain gifts that the each gender is the privileged sign of. So it means that there's something about this gift that a particular gender lives uniquely well, and their job is to model that to the other gender who's also called to live that, right? So we know that all humans, John Paul II was famous for always saying this idea, this phrase that man can only fully find himself in a sincere gift of self to other, right? Mm-hmm. So this is a universal call that we be self-giving, but there's a unique way that women give and a unique way that we are a gift of self to the world, to our families, to our friends, even to our places where we work. We have this the unique call and gift of self that we bring. And so that's where I start, is with this idea of what is this unique way in which women give of themselves to the world? And then we move into receptivity, which is this one we were talking about a little earlier that's written on our soul, but revealed through our bodies in a unique way as women. And then maternity, which I had also mentioned. So these are kind of the foundations really of the feminine genius, of the gifts that flow, of the gifts. And then from these things flow some other gifts that John Paul II talked about quite frequently that we haven't really touched on. So I'd be happy to hear your thoughts on these two, Crystalina. So the first one is sensitivity. John Paul II talked a lot about how women have a unique sensitivity. And when I first heard that, I thought, oh man, well, I'm not a very good woman because I'm not very sensitive. But
here, here, you know, like, to a certain extent we are, we have that capacity, but well, my question is, what's the difference between intuition and sensitivity? Because they're very close aligned, right?
You're absolutely right. Ah, you're so good, Crystalina. No. Yes, I know. That was one I asked myself too, but there's this list that he gives in his letter to women where he lists these four gifts kind of rapid fire. He talks about, he thanks women for their sensitivity, intuition, generosity, and fidelity. And you're like, huh. So he lists them separately as two different things. And then if you go and you look in his writings, you'll see different times where he talks about sensitivity and he talks about intuition. But I think they're closely related, absolutely. But I think we first have to remember that sometimes we define things based on how the world defines them, mm-hmm. and not how the church or God defines them, right? So when we think of sensitivity from a worldly perspective, the reason I thought, I was like, oh man, I'm not a very good woman, is because I immediately thought sensitivity, crying, right? Like being overly emotional.
Yes.
Like I'm just not that kind of girl. Like I don't cry during many movies, you know, like it takes a lot to move me to tears in the sense of like emotion, right? But John Paul II's sensitivity, what he's more speaking of is we're sensitive to the needs of others.
Okay. I like that. That really does put kind of a line in the sand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you think about like Mary at the wedding feast of Cana, right? Like she was very sensitive to the needs of that couple. They're running out of wine. She knows that's going to embarrass them. She knows that, you know, it's her, this friend's wedding day. And that's the last thing that she would want, is to not be able to provide for her guests. And so she's very sensitive to that need. And so that's sensitivity. So this idea of like, oh, we see the needs of others. I think intuition, kind of the way I break it down, is that we see them and then we know what to do about them. That's where the intuition, right? The idea of just like, you just know.
Yes.
You know what to do. You know how to handle it. Mm-hmm. Your brain starts rapid firing. And there's even science behind this, just the way that men's and women's brains are different and the way that we process, right? Women, like everything starts firing and everything's connecting. And right away we can go, okay, this means this and this means this and this means this. And we need to do that, right?
Yes, whereas, exactly. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Men tend to, right? We're speaking in generalities here. Men tend to compartmentalize a little more. It's like, well, we've got this problem. How do we solve this? We have this problem. And women are like, well, we can solve all those problems like this.
Multitaskers, right? Basically.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And there's science behind that. There's brain-based science behind that that is not just written in the Catholic world, but in the secular world. It cannot be denied the way that our brains function. Yes, I think those two are very, very connected, sensitivity and intuition. But that's kind of how I break it down a little bit in the book. And I think it's fun to note, too, what I do with each of these gifts is I give the gift and then I talk about a saint who lived it really well. And we look
fantastic.
At their... Yeah, it's actually, this is one of my favorite parts of the book is we look at their life. We do like a deep dive of their life and we see for example, intuition, it's St. Catherine of Siena. Like, where did she live her intuition? How do we see that lived out? Or for maternity, it's St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, right? And I love her because she was a physical mother. She was an adoptive mother. She was a spiritual mother as a teacher, and she was mother superior of her religious order. So like she got to experience and live all these aspects. Yeah, it's like, how did she live that? What does that look like? And then we look at, okay, so here's this gift we've been given, right? We're the privileged sign of this. It's more natural to us. It's what we get to bring into the world in a unique way, model to the men in our lives and to our children who are growing up and learning how to live these gifts. And in some sense, there's some link to, in a sense, they're like virtues in the sense that, you know, we can grow in these things, right? And so we look at, but how can that get twisted? How can this great gift get twisted by the world and turn not from a strength, but into a weakness? And then what do we do about it when that happens? And so that's kind of how each chapter flows as we look at each of these gifts.
I love it, Lisa. That's phenomenal. And it really will break it down to any ABC Catholic like myself can understand and really take on these concepts. And one thing I know about the feminine genius and the gifts that God has given all of us is they're not meant just for us alone. God's gifts for us and that he's given us are never just meant for us, but we benefit from them, absolutely. But they're always meant to be gifted out for his church, for his people, for the greater glory of God, basically, right? And yeah. It's always meant to be given. And then you also receive in that giving. It's really beautiful how he created this cycle of life within the church, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's why like that first gift is self-giving, because these gifts, like you said, they're not meant to serve us. They're meant to serve the world.
Yes. And that's when you thrive. That's when you're kind of happy and more at peace. And it's so opposite, upside down, right? In the world's concept of, well, you have to live for yourself. Do it for yourself. You can't give right now. You can't have kids right now. You're going to waste your life. You're going to waste your youth, you know, and then you're scrambling and trying to just keep everything for yourself. And then you're miserable and you have regrets. And well, it's just not a good life. It just isn't. And everyone that has lived that life or had a taste of that life, like me, I wouldn't want to go back for anything, for nothing, you know? And I was living for myself in every way. And it was horrible, disgusting lifestyle. Just binging on your own needs and wants is not a way to live at all. And so to really just give it all to God, because then you have that weight of the world and the sin and the confusion. And honestly, the more you live these things out right ordered, the easier and things just flow. Doesn't it seem that way, Lisa? And I fought it for a little while. I mean, being a speaker and going out and traveling and doing everything else, I was absolutely living my feminine genius in that for a time. And it was just for a season though, right? But then it kind of evolved because I got married and then I started having children and things changed. And so my gifts changed that God gave me and what he was asking me to do with those gifts. And so there also are seasons with these gifts as well, wouldn't you say?
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's so important because I think sometimes we think, oh, well, I'll have to lose a part of myself. And in some sense, yeah, we do lose a piece of ourselves when we become mothers, but in the best way possible. But those gifts are still being used. They're just now being directed towards something new and something different. And, you know, it's not like, oh, well, now I can't ever, you know, live this gift that I have anymore, but that, no, I'm going to use it in a different way.
Yes. And sometimes it changes and shifts, and then God brings you right back to it full circle, and you're stronger and you're better in that gift that you had to put on pause for a while, is what I have found, right? Mm-hmm. And the more you kind of give into what God is asking versus what you're asking, it hurts in the beginning sometimes, right? But at the same time, it's because you're growing and you're tapping into something new that he's given you, and you've got to get the muscle for it. And the only mm-hmm. way to do that is to live it out day in and day out, right? To become strong in that. And mm-hmm. it hurts and it's hard, but that I think comes along with gifts as well, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where I think when I say that they're kind of like virtues, in the sense that you can grow in these things. Because I've had women say to me, well, I'm just not very maternal, or I'm just naturally selfish. I'm not self-giving.
Join the club.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, I understand that. But just because God gave these gifts to you doesn't mean that they're just quick and easy and natural. You have to grow in them. You have to work for them. You have to develop them and cultivate them. Especially if you've grown up not being told that these gifts are good, or that these gifts are purposeful, or you know, I guess, you know, sometimes some of these more feminine gifts, you know, being sensitive or intuitive, you know, mm-hmm. sometimes in like the work world or in the cutthroat world of just trying to move the needle forward, those aren't as valued. And so they're not as cultivated. And so then you get to this stage where you really need them, and you go, oh, well, I'm just not good at them. Well, maybe that's true, but that doesn't mean that you can't grow in them. That doesn't mean that you can't develop them. That doesn't mean that you can't turn to the Lord and say, hey, I know that like this is written on my heart, and this is a part of who I am, but I'm, Lord, like, show me, how do I do this? How do I be selfless? How do I give of myself when I don't want to? Because I think that's natural, right? Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean you don't possess the gift. It just means that maybe you haven't exercised that muscle before. But once you do, it gets easier. And then it starts to become enjoyable, right? Like, I think about running. When I was in college, I trained for and ran a marathon. And those first few weeks were just painful. I did not like it. I didn't want to get up and go run. I didn't want to, you know, have to stretch and get going. And then by the end of the marathon, oh my gosh, I loved running. Like, it was hard work, but my body craved it. I loved it. I got into a rhythm with it, and it became something that was natural. And then it was enjoyable.
What got you into running?
You know, I am just a goal-oriented person.
Yes, you are. You are, really. You're very serious, which is a beautiful thing. It's great, and you get a lot done, but What got you into it? You were doing it with friends? Was there a boyfriend? What was the motivation? Because when you really don't like doing something, but you keep on and keep on, there always has to be some motivation in it.
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm just the type of person who just wants to prove that they can do things that they don't think they can do, right? So yeah. I was in college, and I remember in high school running the mile for the last time and thinking, oh, good. I never have to run long distance again. I mean, this is 1 mile. And here I was. So ridiculous. And so I just thought, you know, I'm going to run a marathon, and I'm just going to start at the beginning. I picked up a training book. It was like the non-runner's marathon trainer. Right? And it started out with like, take a 10-minute walk. I'm like, okay, I can do that. Right. Yeah. Like, I like to prove to myself that I can do things if I take the steps and I'm patient with myself and I hold on loosely, right? Because sometimes you set big goals and you can't finish them because that's not what God's calling you to. Sometimes that, you know, you only can take it so far, and there's a reason, and you just have to let go of it. But it's funny that you say, was it for a boyfriend? Because it was not for a boyfriend, but halfway through my training, my husband, Kevin, who was just a friend. Yeah,
I knew there was something.
I think there was an extra motivation to finish, I should say. I think I would have finished anyway.
That got you through.
Yeah, he started to run with me just for fun. And it was through running. It was through that time just to have conversation. And sometimes other people would run with us. Sometimes it was just he and I. It kind of depended on the day and the run. But we really got to see each other and know each other in a unique way. You know, when you're running up a hill and you want to quit, you see someone's perseverance. You see their character come out, right?
And the whining or just how they handle the toughness of the situation, huh?
Yep. And here we were. And yeah, so we started a couple weeks before the actual running of the marathon. We started officially dating. So yeah.
Nice. You still run too to this day together, don't you?
We always run on our dating anniversary because he asked me out right before a run. And so that was really cute, like on our first date. So we always run on that day. And then we have it. It's a little harder with kids, with younger kids, but we do try to get out and run together. Not nearly as much as we'd like to. But there's seasons. Like all things, there's seasons. So
like all things, right? There are seasons. And even when it comes to these gifts and feminine genius, God sends you helpers. God sends you like helpmates or people, like even just if you're confused at what or how they should be living as a woman, and especially a Catholic woman these days, right? Because some people are afraid to even admit they're Catholic, let alone like living it out in public, you know, in the public square of living your feminine genius gifts out. It can be a little intimidating right now. What would you say to those women?
I think you have to have that eternal perspective, right? Like if we listen to the world for our cues, we're going to have to change who we are every 10 to 15 years. We're going to have to change what we think we're supposed to be. And that's just exhausting to me. So I love the security of knowing this is never going to change. You know, my understanding of who I am as a woman, whether I'm 18 or I'm 80, it's rooted in scripture. It's rooted in the teachings of the church. And I can take peace in that, and I don't have to try to figure it out over and over and over again or redefine myself over and over again. Of course, it can always go deeper, right? My understanding is always going to go deeper, but it's not going to change tracks, you know? It's not going to completely jump ship. And so just in some sense, we really just have to let go of that and not be afraid of what the world is saying or thinking or doing or feeling like pressured to conform to what society is telling us. We can stand firm in our roots and say, it's okay. It's okay. I know who I am. I know who God created me to be. I know what unique gifts I bring into this world in a broad sense as a woman. And then in a more deeper laser focused sense as an individual, how God is calling me to express and live my femininity and the way that I'm to called to bring, you know, my gifts into the world, right? Like not everyone can be Crystallina, not everyone should be Crystallina, right? We don't need more Crystallinas. We need you, right?
That's right. That's right.
But as, you know, but still as understanding your basic foundations. And then from there, I mean, just look at the lives of the saints. Like they give us this amazing example of the way in which the way you live and express your femininity is like so vast. We have female saints from every nation, from every language, from every period of time, and the way that they lived it looks so differently when you compare a Thérèse of Lisieux, who was, you know, a cloistered nun, the little flower, right? And then you compare that to like a Teresa of Avila, who was like out in the world and founding convents and boldly,
speaking.
No nonsense, girl. That's right, right? And then you have, you know, saints who were mothers, and you have saints who, you know, never made a vow as a married or a religious, but lived their whole lives as singles and served the world in their own unique way, right? And so like there's so many ways you can express this that I think sometimes we get afraid because we think we have to be in this one little box. And if we don't fit that box, then we're failing. When God's like, no, like I have a unique call for you. And it's okay if it doesn't look like the woman standing next to you, you know, who's also striving to live her vocation and is asking that same question, Crystallina, that you ask your kids, you know, not like, what do I want to do with my life? But Lord, what do you want me to do with my life? Like, I think that's a question we should always ask ourselves. You know?
It really is a guiding point and a starting point of what you're doing with your life. And something I really want to highlight is what you just said, Lisa. I absolutely love it. Is like, are you taking your cues from the world? And that is really a good question to ask when you're taking some spiritual inventory. Like, where are you getting your cues from? Why are you doing what you're doing? And if that question, if also the question of who are you and whose are you, if those are questions that you hear Lisa and I talking about and you don't know the answer to that, that is something good to maybe today go into adoration and talk to Jesus about, because those are questions you should know immediately. And if you don't, you got to start talking to God. You got to get to confession and you've got to get right with him. And he will answer those questions for you. He's not excluding you or leaving you out or doesn't have that same plan for you. He does. And I think it's so sad that women are so competitive and territorial that they can't put that aside and realize, like, I'm not your competition, Lisa. And Lisa is not my competition, but we're all here for the greater glory of God. And he gave us individual, beautiful gifts to live out and to help each other and to help other people, you know? And it's not about wanting to be like that other person. You should want to grow into the amazing, magnificent person God is actually calling you to be. And you can be a force to be reckoned with, but you have to recognize that you belong to God and he has this great, amazing plan. But how are you living your life out to follow that?
Become that. And just so your listeners know, Kristen, I know you and I've known you for years. You are one of the best people at that. I always say when people are like, if I tell someone I'm on your show, you know, it's like, oh, well, what's Kristalina like? I always say she is the best cheerleader I know. Like, you are just
always cheering people
on. But it's so true. Like, you say that. I just want everyone to know that that's not a line. Like, she's not just talking. Like, she lives that. Like, she has always been so supportive of any project I have going on. She's always like, what can I do? How can I help? Let's get this out there. The world needs this. And I think you're just an amazing example of what you're saying. Like, you live it. And I love that.
Oh, Lisa, thank you. Brought tears to my eyes. You did. You're so sweet. Thank you. I really appreciate that. I just feel women really need to lift each other up, especially now, and to come together. And everybody needs that. Okay, Lisa, I'm so excited about this book. And it has been very helpful for me too, also as a refresher, you know, because you can forget. But where can people buy this book?
The easiest place is ascensionpress.com/reveal-the-gift, all one word. And it's also on Amazon. So if you just, you know, search Reveal the Gift, Living the Feminine Genius, you're going to find it.
And honestly, it's not something you have to read all at once. It can just be in different sittings or in the morning. You do a chapter at a time or a couple pages at a time to just really, really let it kind of sit with you. It's absolutely a great book. And
thank you.
Thank you for being here again. It's been fun and it's been nice talking with you again. We always have a good time.
I know. I do. I really feel like we're just having coffee. It's great.
Right? Well, thank you for being here, and you will be in my prayers, and I will have you back on soon.
I would love that.
I want to thank my guest again, Lisa Cotter, for being here, and thank all of you for joining. Tonight is the first prom that we are going to experience in our household. So if you all could please say a prayer for me. I have two teenagers going to prom tonight. So if you could say a prayer for me, I would appreciate that. And before I leave you, I would like to leave this show with a quote from Mother Angelica. In everything that happens, Jesus is sounding the call to holiness. That's an excellent quote. I'm going to put that on my refrigerator. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend, and I'll see you next week. God bless. Bye-bye.
This is a digital moment with Sandra McDevitt. Did you know there is a church named after a bull? In Toulouse, France, there is a church, Notre Dame de Tours, Our Lady of the Bull. The church is built on the spot where one of France's most illustrious martyrs was gored to death by a bull. Saint Cernan was sent by Rome as a missionary to the pagan Gauls. He built a church, converted many, and became the first bishop of Toulouse. Refusing to worship the false god in the temple, he was tied to a bull about to be sacrificed. After being gored to death, His mangled body was recovered by holy Christians and buried with honor. Notre Dame de Tours today is still active as a church of pilgrimage, and St. Cernan's relics are there. He is commemorated November 29th. I'm Sandra McDevitt for EWTN Radio.